Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network in association with Mother, She Wrote Media. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, I'm going to be talking with Paul Savas. He's the executive director of the Trike Theater in Bentonville, Arkansas. It's a theater for kids. And among other things, we're going to talk about how theater training is beneficial for any kid, no matter what profession they choose when they get older. Paul is also an actor. He's been in many stage performances. So we're going to keep the conversation pretty much on the theater and kids and acting, although we might veer off into some politics. You never know. No promises. But before we get into our conversation, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get 2 bonus What's Up episodes per week. Kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and talk about whatever is on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Paul Savas. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Oh my gosh. It is so great to be here.
This is going to be fun. You're welcome. And this is going to be fun. You know, just for the audience, we've been friends. We've known each other for, I don't know, like since early 2000s. And we haven't talked too much just, you know, outside of social media, but we know each other through a friend, and I've followed your career. I think you're really interesting, and I'm so, I came across, I believe it was like a news clipping, or not a clipping, mm-hmm. but a news video where you were being interviewed about the Trike Theater, so I'm going to ask you about that, but what you said about it really piqued my interest, and it was just about how kids can benefit, no matter what they do later in life, from, mm-hmm. You know, theater training. So I just want you to talk a little bit about the Trike Theater, and then we'll get into the details of it.
Yeah, you got it. Trike Theater, thanks for the question, Kimberly. Mm-hmm. Trike Theater is so named because we have 3 main program types, productions, outreach programs, and academy programs. Real quick, academy programs are after school training in theater skills. Outreach programs are residencies in schools, and then the production programs are shows for kids and their families. And sometimes the kids are in the shows. And so we give children the opportunity to learn about theater, see theater, and then do theater. Now, theater is the vehicle. Mm-hmm. Really, they're learning social emotional skills that they're 100% going to bring mm-hmm. to whatever endeavor they do. You know, discipline, working mm-hmm. with a team, yeah. you know, creative problem solving. These skills port everywhere.
Yeah.
I remember I used to work for a different theater company on the East Coast, and there, the corporate sort of big you know, behemoths were BMW and Michelin. They had their North American headquarters there, and whenever I talked to like their HR executives, I would always ask, what kind of person do you want to hire? Mm-hmm. And they always, like, to a person. And the same thing happens here, because here where I live now is the home of is the HQ of Walmart. is they always say, well, Herb, the guy at Michelin, he said, we can teach anybody how to make a tire. Mm-hmm. What we can't teach is creative problem solving, mm-hmm. working with a team, mm-hmm. self-confident, you know, all of these things that kids and adults get when they engage in the theater. Mm-hmm. So I always tell these the HR executives that they're looking to hire theater people.
Wow.
Because those skills are, you know, they port to just about anything anybody wants to do.
Yeah.
That's, you name it.
That's fascinating. And, you know, I will double down on that, because for 10 years I was an actor, and it helped me when I was in sales. I went into sales after I stopped acting. And now doing what I'm doing as a podcaster, author, and activist certainly helps me in, you know, when I spoke in front of all kinds of people at the Capitol building, it gave me that opportunity. I was already in front of people. And I of course, you get a little nervous when you're doing things like that, but you have the tools and the understanding of how to overcome it. And yeah, it doesn't look like you're nervous, even if you are.
Absolutely. And you know, now that I'm a dad, mm-hmm. I'm also like teaching about like courage and fear. Mm-hmm. Right. And you bring it up. It's stage fright. Right. Mm-hmm. You're not without it. You know, right. Courage is not, bravery is not the absence of fear, right? Mm-hmm. Ask any freaking soldier.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's having the skills and the confidence to just move forward and pivot if you need to. And I think that that's one of the skills too that we really teach, is that flexibility that is born in improv situations, right? When you're in front of Capitol steps and you're rallying a crowd, and something happens that you have to be able to mm-hmm. incorporate that, mm-hmm. take the conversation in a different turn, or take it in a turn that is unexpected, whatever, you need to be able to think on your feet.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that we really teach kids. We work with a terrific marketing team, and one of their recent additions to how we talk about ourselves is we help kids understand they're great, and it's the they are, but then also the T-H-E-I-R great. Mm-hmm. And so we really help kids understand their own voice, have the confidence in speaking their own voice. That's really exciting to yeah. see kids kind of emerge, especially those kids that, you know, every once in a while we get one of those kids that's already out of their shell, right? Mm-hmm. Or already really, really confident. But it's so wonderful. And it's great to see them thrive, obviously. It's also so great to see those kids who are in a shell or in a bubble or something,
oh, yeah.
just kind of like peek out at you with these skills that you're able to give them.
Wow.
So that's what we do.
Now, let me ask you, as far as being executive director, what does that mean for you? Like, I'm just curious about what you do there.
So I'm the guy that gets the blame when things go sour, and I am the guy who is not given the accolades when things go well. Right?
Aww.
So I make sure that we are on our, you know, the fun stuff that I do. But let me start with the not fun stuff. Okay. I don't want to end on the not fun stuff.
Right.
The not fun stuff that I do is I manage the reporting, right?
Uh-huh.
So audits, census stuff, you know, all the financial reports, all of the reports to funders and this kind of stuff.
Right.
I also make sure, you know, my signature's on all the checks. So mm-hmm. I make sure everything gets paid. I mm-hmm. deal with vendors and at blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I make sure that if the, and every once in a while, you know, I'm plunging a toilet, right? All of this kind of stuff. The real fun stuff is making sure that the company's strategic position is right, that its strategic plan is moving in lockstep with the community's strategic plan, and making sure that we you know, our programs are as excellent as possible, and making sure that our people have what they need in order to execute their programs to the best of their ability. And sometimes that's just a function of money, but sometimes that's a function of sort of the more human management training, so mentoring sorts of things. So teaching our younger staff members how to navigate situations, how to deal with each other, how to develop programming, and then also making sure that we have a board that reflects our community, have a board that's active in mm-hmm. fundraising, mm-hmm. Have a board that is not, you know, is active in the right ways. You don't want a board that's into the too far into the details just because it becomes cumbersome, but you want them to do proper oversight. So all of that strategic stuff and sort of guidance and shepherding of the organization and making sure that the teams have what they need to excel, that's the real fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's really hard because, you know, we are a not-for-profit theater company,
yeah.
right? We often are strapped for cash, mm-hmm. and, you know, we are unable to pay people what we wish we could pay people, right? And and you know, in Northwest Arkansas, it's like, you know, maybe the same everywhere really, but in Northwest Arkansas, it's not a terribly cheap place to live. It's a great place to live, but it's not necessarily a cheap place to live. So, you know, it's really just trying to balance the company in a healthy way. And you know, when COVID happened, we really, and then the murder of George Floyd, we really, really buckled down on values, right? And making sure that we were living our values, which for a large part we were. And one of the things that we really, really, not because we weren't doing it, but it was in that time, it was, you know, when we really couldn't do much, because if you didn't know, the business model of a theater is to cram as many people that you can into a small space.
Right.
So we couldn't really do a ton of other things, but we could action on you know, culture. And we really took a deep dive in that. And one of the things that we said, look, we're really good at this and we're just going to get even better, was really taking care of our people and really where, you know, which we couldn't in terms of just giving people more money, but we could do better at creating a much better work-life balance. So I protect our team, and sometimes I protect our team from themselves, because everybody wants to overachieve, right? Yeah. It's just like, no, you just need to quit with the hours this week. Right. Just go home.
Right.
Right.
Wow.
So that's my job.
Interesting.
No, no, no.
Now, okay, we're seeing out in the real world, we're seeing a lot of like book bans and anti-trans rhetoric and all of that stuff. Yeah. So I'm just, you know, taking that into account, and obviously because you are an actor and you are a director of a theater, you do understand the importance of the arts. But I just kind of want you to talk about that a little bit, even though the audience here is liberal and probably already understands it, but it is so important to have creativity, to celebrate creativity, and it seems like there are certain people in this country who just don't want to do that, and I want you to speak to why that isn't so great.
I am astonished at where we are culturally, you know, like, as you say, most of your audience probably is. It's dumbfounding to me that people want to make fewer available perspectives to be exposed to. That people want to ban expression. And it seems to be that, you know, part of the greatness of our country is just the exact opposite of that. It is to enjoy more perspectives, to be exposed to more perspectives, the vibrancy and the creativity in any sphere, in any industry, that comes from the exposure to differences is bankable. Not only is it a good moral thing, right? I mean, if you can't convince somebody about the morality of something, convince them about the economics of it, right?
Right,
and it's an economically brilliant thing that I don't understand. I guess I just think that a lot of people just want to live in the Wild West, I suppose. I don't get it, but that's not what you asked me to talk about. It is vitally important that. So here's another example. When we throw a bunch of people together on a team to create a play, part of what you're doing is you're putting together people to come at a problem in different ways, right? And so if they're all coming at a problem from the same perspective, it might as well be a one person show,
right?
Right. But you become reliant on everyone else's perspective to help make yours the best that yours can be. So I just think that that sort of framework, that, you know, way of operating translates into the quote unquote real world in such a positive way. So when people are banning books, we step up and we are, you know, make it very clear that this is an absurdity and an affront to mm-hmm. who we are. We do the same when there are anti-trans eruptions mm-hmm. in our community, which we really, you know, touch wood, yet haven't really seen. Mm-hmm. And there is a really great a drag fashion show that happens once a year, which stopped happening with COVID. And I hope my buddy, I got to talk to him about that, because yeah. I don't know if he's done one since COVID.
Wow.
Yeah, we need to do that again and get the press there. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. What would you say in what you do? Because the next thing I want to talk to you about is just you. So this is the last question on what you're doing. But what is the most, it's two part, what's the most fun thing about teaching kids, and what have they taught you?
Gosh, that's a great question. The thing that is most fun that kids teach me every single day, and I include my daughter in that, is just the honesty of questions that they have, and the peace and the stillness that is so hard to maintain, that is really required to answer their questions in a real helpful way. So, you know, my daughter will ask me big freaking questions that I have to answer.
Yeah.
You know, right? And I can't sidestep because, and she'll remember what I say, right? So you know, the discipline of sort of being at peace and trying to have a clear sort of perspective about the world. I'm an old dad. I'm 50. I'll be 54 tomorrow.
Oh my God, you're so old.
I know I am. I'm
happy
so
birthday.
Ancient. But you know, I wonder, like, I, you know, when I look back, I wonder how fundamentally my life would have changed had I had my daughter, you know, 20 years ago or something like that. Okay, it's most fun to see kids when you give them a skill and they recognize that they get it.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Right? They understand that, oh, wait a minute, I am now good at this. Mm-hmm. And you see their independence mm-hmm. and you see them act on it. That's the most satisfying thing with teaching kids for me. And those are not like, oh gosh, now I know how to build a set or mm-hmm. whatever. You know, it's anything. Mm-hmm. Just their sense of, I now have learned this thing and I know how to make it help me. That's really satisfying to me.
Yeah, I can see why. And how old is your daughter?
She's 6.
Wow, that's such a good age. And is she in the company?
She's not. She's done a number of camps and classes, but she's not a regular. Oh my gosh, she needs to be there every day. I'm going to call her up right now.
You have to be here every day.
That's right.
That's so cute.
You know, and she's you know, really just trying to right now guide her to these extracurricular a variety of extracurricular activities that she may like. She likes the theater, but it's and she likes the classes that we do. At that age, they're super, you know, about creative play more mm-hmm. so than let's make a play,
right?
She loves dance. I'm trying to guide her towards, we're trying to dip our toes in some of the sports stuff now. So we say, I wouldn't mind her getting some martial arts in her.
Oh, yeah.
We're doing it. We're working on it.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay, we have to take a quick break, but we will be back after this message. Hey, this is Kimberly, the host of the show you're listening to right now. Are you my patron on Patreon? Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Check out the tiers and become a patron today. I'll be your best friend. I swear to God. Okay, we're back. All right, so now I want to talk about you. I have some questions, and this is just going to be fun for me, too, because I remember talking to you about this, and I want to find out about your acting career, but before we get into that, I know you lived abroad when you were younger, and so did I. I had the opportunity to live in Russia. It was Soviet Russia for just about 9 months. So I want you to talk about your experience. I want you to say where you are, because I don't want to get it wrong, and why you were there and what it was like.
Okay, so when I was 10 years old, my family, for my dad's oil job, moved to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, and we were there for 5 years. Moved there from Houston, Texas, and I remember when we were having the family meeting about moving to this strange place, Dad was like, it's like Hawaii. It was not like Hawaii. The culture shock was great.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But we quickly learned to love the place, mm-hmm. and love the community too, that we were the thrust into, both the local community as well as the expat community. And my parents loved it so much that after I went to college, they did 2 more 5-year stints abroad.
Wow.
One in Kenya and then the other one in Nairobi and the other one in Madrid. And I really loved, especially, I mean, I loved being there, but you know, when you're there, you're a kid, mm-hmm. right? It's just life. You have friends, and your friends are your friends, and you can't really understand how it might have been different elsewhere. But I remember spending vacations on beaches with phosphorescent surf.
Wow.
this was just like, get in the car, drive for 6 hours, and then get on a boat and chug along for another 2 hours, and then you're at this idyllic island. I remember going to the food. Malaysian food, such a wonderful sort of Indonesian sort of South Asian tangy sweetness. Oh, the best. I grew a fondness for not only Malaysian food, which is harder to get in the United States, but also cultivated a great love for Indian food. And where I live
now,
in Northwest Arkansas, there is a significant Indian population. Mm-hmm. And the Indian food here is terrific.
I
love living in Malaysia, and in hindsight, it gave me one of the perspectives that I wish more Americans were able to gain. Mm-hmm. And that's just that there are other ways to live, mm-hmm. right? Other places have different types of life. Not saying that we need to live differently here, although there are some things that we need to start freaking doing differently.
Yeah.
But just having your ears goes back to the diversity and the book banning thing, right? Mm-hmm. We need exposure to other perspectives. We need exposure to other cultures. Mm-hmm. It's necessary for a thriving community. So I got that in spades going to Malaysia.
Yeah, I was going to say, what did living abroad teach you? And I guess that's what it is. And it's interesting because my experience, I was 12 years old when I lived in Soviet Russia, and I think the thing that I took from it, the most significant thing outside of just understanding, what it was like to live in a communist country, was I fully understood what being a patriot meant. And as when you're 12 years old, you're not really thinking about how patriotic you are. and you know, you're just going to the 7-Eleven and getting candy and stuff. And so and that's funny because that's exactly what I did. As soon as I came back, my stepmother was pregnant when we lived there, and so I was there for one full school year. And in March we came back to the States just for a month so she could give birth, and the first thing I did was I went to the 7-Eleven and I got so much junk food and I made myself sick. But I did understand. So I had a different experience in that, you know, when Malaysia obviously is different. So I was unable to say, oh my God, this is an awesome culture. And I can see how other people live. I mean, what I saw was grayness and people looking on the ground and basically people who were just held under the thumb of communism. And so, but still living abroad, especially when you're young, I think, I mean, I almost wish that everybody, like you said, everybody should have to do it just so they can get a different perspective and understand that, you know, it's different elsewhere and it's okay.
That's right. And also there's you learn good and bad things.
Yeah.
You know, you learn, oh my gosh. And communist Russia living under the thumb of that. Oh my gosh. I think that they probably banned some frickin' books.
Right. And then their paper Pravda is just basically our Fox News, but yeah. Right. And I learned Pravda means truth and it was just filled with lies. So it was definitely, I was really happy to have that experience. But okay, now I want to ask you too, I know you grew up there, and then you also lived in Texas, and I know you went to school in Texas.
Yep.
So I want to know, how did you get the acting bug? When did you start with that? What was your inspiration?
I think that there was never really a time, you know, from my mom saying that, you know, Paul, in the Christmas play, you were the only wise man that I could hear, you know, all the way up through, you know, college and after. I mean, I don't think I've had very few real jobs.
You're very lucky. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've had very, very few jobs. I've been lucky to say that I've had very few jobs outside of the theater. I have very little money. Right. I kind of knew that was the trajectory from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah.
So you just felt it. Now, when you were studying, what kind of acting did you study? Did you like study a style of acting like Meisner or method?
Yeah. Yeah. Stanislavski based American realism, you know, not so much method, but just how to, it's Stanislavski, right?
Okay,
so method is based on that. It's such a loaded, word in the United States, method acting, right? But what we learned, at my graduate school, which is where I did sort of my most intensive studying of the art form, was like examining how emotional reactions are created, both naturally and in a designed sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
And how they are structured narratively.
Wow.
Right. So you know, how you try to, as an actor, break down a scene so that you are able to build the life within it, achieving the moments that you see that you want to bring forth to tell the story that you read from you, this character, right? It's a pretty simple formula that's, you know, endlessly complex to activate, you know.
Wow. You know, it's fascinating to listen to you talk about that, because I studied Meisner, and with the coach that I studied with, I was actually really happy to find out two things. Number one, while I was studying, I went to, I can't remember the name of it, but it was a playhouse in Los Angeles, and I know Jeff Goldblum is one of the coaches, and they teach Meisner. I was really kind of afraid to go because I thought, oh, this is going to be superior to what I'm experiencing. And the day that I went to just check out the classes, I was actually quite surprised that I actually felt it was inferior. And the reason I say that is because I know my coach stuck to Sanford Meisner's technique very, very closely. And, you know, for instance, if we were up there, we do these things called repetition. And for those of you who don't know, it's basically where you just, you know, if you're just standing there and doing a repetition, it's I say, I feel nervous. And then you say, you feel nervous? I feel nervous. And you have to at least repeat once, and you have to focus on emotions, or you focus on what the other person appears to look like or feel, or you can do that. But you can't say something like, fuck you. You'd have to say, you're making me angry, because you have to get in touch with your emotions. And so I went to go view one of those classes, audit one of those classes, and these actors were just saying things like, fuck you. They weren't getting to their emotion. And then the coach, after they were finished, would say, now tell me why you're so great, why you did such a good, and it was like, what? And so I was actually like, wow, I'm really learning well. And then when I had moved to Northern California years and years later, and there was this man, I wish I remembered his name, but he was fantastic. He did a one-man show and he played Sanford Meisner. And from watching what, you know, he was teaching, I did really recognize, I think I got a great coach. But I didn't experience what you just talked about, you know, how your emotions are built and all of that. That's fascinating to me. And I kind of wish I would know how to do that. But we were just coming from, I don't know the best way, just like in the moment. You know, going for being in the moment and really being that person that you're playing. And how would you feel if this happened? Which is funny to me, because on a side note, which I won't get into too much, I'm in this whole, like, I don't know, spiritual journey. And I hate the word spiritual, but I hate the word journey. But I feel like, you know, we're playing these characters anyway. You know, you're playing the character of Paul Savas, the, you know, executive director of the Trike Theater. I'm Kimberly, the podcaster, who's also a writer and has a big mouth and a dirty mouth and all that stuff. And so it's like, we're already playing the role. And so I think you just like kind of swap it out and change that role. And
I just want to get a different writer sometimes.
Yeah, no shit, huh?
Get that writer needs a vacation. Damn.
Especially these days with the crazy news happening. Oh my God, it's just so freaking crazy.
You know, may you be cursed to live in interesting times.
Huh? Yes, exactly. That's where we are. All right. So, what about now? I'm not too familiar with what you've done work-wise. I mean, I know you were in The Merchant of Venice. I saw that on your Facebook page. And or maybe it was on YouTube. I don't remember. And that was really impressive. I was really impressed. And then
that was fun.
It looked fun. You did a great job, obviously.
Well, thank you.
But what have you done? What kind of stage performance? Have you done movies? What have you done?
Yeah. No. I have not been in anything anybody will know.
Okay.
So
other than The Merchant of Venice,
there's what's that?
I said other than The Merchant of Venice.
Well, I mean,
I know what you mean, anybody has really seen, right? I know.
I've been in a ton of things people have heard about in terms of titles,
right?
But you know, I was part of the I don't have money thing is twofold. It's because the type of theater that I was drawn to from the early age as a young adult was the sort of theater that doesn't make money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like off stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm mediocre. Right. I'm a mediocre actor. Right. I'm not great. Right. I had some flashes of brilliance, I think, but I'm not that great. Right. Which is totally fine. So after graduate school, I joined the National Theater of the Deaf for about 2.5 years. And that was such a wonderful experience. First of all, because I had health insurance. Right. They offered health insurance. Mm-hmm. But then also I had a steady job for 2.5 years. It's just you're an actor in a show, and I was a voicing actor, and so the deaf actors were cast physically in all of the main roles, mm-hmm. but the two the at minimum two, well, at minimum one, at maximum four hearing actors were placed in the scene in small roles, sometimes as furniture, you know, given whatever the play was, and provide the oral English performance of what is being done on, you know, in sign language, right? So all of the character choices are really made by the deaf actor, and then sort of like translated into English acting, you know, hearing acting rather. And so there's a certain discipline that came with that, because, you know, there I am doing sometimes four different voices in a scene, you know, making sure that they're different audibly but not fake, right, and all of this kind of stuff. Did that, and then basically, you know, put my finger to the wind and just went wherever the work was. And so I was, you know, one of those vagabond theater actors. Learned to get my directing chops up, learned fight choreography, learned to play the didgeridoo, which I did for money a couple of times. Was an editor for a publishing house called Limelight Editions, which just printed theater books. I was a reader first, and then he let me edit a single book, which was fun. So I've done, you know, and then teaching, and then, you know, got, after 9/11, you know, all, thank God the only thing that I lost physically was work.
Right.
So I went to, I was living in New York City, and went into some debt because of not being able to work being an actor and living in New York City. I took a 3-year teaching position at one of the SUNY schools, one of the state universities in New York, and then picked up that aspect. And then my then wife, divorced now, she and I met when I lived up in upstate New York, and then we for a while we lived again in the New York City metropolitan area. But then I learned that there was this I took a directing gig at Clemson University in Clemson, South Carolina, and found a theater that was looking for an executive director and an artistic director, and they wanted it to be the same person. Talked them into hiring me, talked them into paying me more than the original offer. And then my wife said, yeah, let's go for it. And so we moved to Greenville, South Carolina, which is where I kind of took the next turn in my career away from sort of freelance artist to the arts leader, right? Mm-hmm. And led that organization to where it currently is. And you know, it was a failing ship when I took over. And we turned it around and really made it vital in the community again. And then I sort of passed it off to the next after about 10 years, passed it off to the next crew. That's when my daughter was here too. So we were like, you know, moved up here to take over a children's theater, you know, like you do. And also as executive and artistic director, you know, you're there from first light to final rehearsal. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, and in these theaters at this size, you know, the budget size of that theater when I was hired was like $350,000 a year, right? Mm-hmm. And when I left it was 1.1.
Wow.
But still at those rates, you know, there's a lot at those budget sizes, you're still, if you want to serve your community in the proper way and want to really, really serve the local artists as well, or cast kids, all of the rehearsals are happening after school mm-hmm. and after work and at night, mm-hmm. right? And so that was something that I promised myself that I would not do, mm-hmm. For my daughter.
Right,
so
yeah.
when this opportunity came up to just be the executive director, like, oh yeah, hey, I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Let's have that change of life. And then Bentonville is a ridiculously cool little corner of Northwest Arkansas.
Hmm.
I recommend everybody make a trip to come visit.
Maybe one day. I've never even thought of it, but I mean, everything that I've seen that you post, it looks really pretty and quaint and fun and artistic.
Well, the one of the things about it is, regardless of what you think about Walmart, and there are many different things to think about Walmart, right? They're based here, mm-hmm. and they're able to hire executive talent from anywhere on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So they have made sure that the community here is attractive to
look at that, yeah.
You know, anyone,
mm-hmm.
right? And so has the
that
amenities,
makes sense. Yeah, right.
That are required. One of the country's greatest American art museums is here.
Hmm.
It's called Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. We have one of the best mountain bike trail systems on the planet here. The art scene is particularly great. I mean, we're a small community, so
yeah.
You know, we're not competing with New York and LA
right.
and terms of quality of art and food and that kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what we have is really, really excellent. So I recommend everybody bring their mountain bike, come visit, see some art.
And then I just have to ask you, what is the weather like in the summer and the winter? Does it get really humid? Does it snow?
Does it smell?
Snow. Does it snow? Does Arkansas smell? Does it smell bad?
Does it smell bad? Every place smells bad once in a while. We all need baths.
Does it snow in the wintertime?
It doesn't snow as much as I wish that it
yeah,
would.
Right.
I like the cold.
Me too. Yeah.
I don't like to I don't want to have to shovel snow
mm-hmm.
all the time, right? But look, in the winter it will snow. You know, maybe we'll get one snow of like 5 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
That's not bad, yeah.
I remember when I said I left New York City to after 9/11 to take that 3-year
mm-hmm.
teaching gig. It was in SUNY Oswego.
Mm-hmm.
My first winter there was 181 inches of snow.
Oh, my God.
I do not like that. I have lived, but I can deal with it.
Yeah.
Right?
I
can deal with it.
Right.
I've lived in the South now since 2007, you know, regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to make fun of it, but I have come to love how Southerners deal with snow.
Which is
if there's like 20% chance of snow, the town's gonna shut down.
That's funny.
Right? It's like and then if there is snow, just stay home. You're staying home for a week. If there's like half an inch of snow on a Tuesday, you lose Monday because you're stocking up. You know, you run into the store, and then Tuesday through Friday are totally gone because nobody's leaving their home.
Right.
And I have really come to love this.
That's hilarious.
Way of dealing with snow. In the summer, it'll get into the 90s. For a few weeks, and there'll be some humidity and bugs, but it's really not terrible.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a really nice temperate place.
I hate humidity.
It's
and
no
I,
LA.
No,
it's
well, of course.
California.
So now you've lived in LA and you've lived in New York. Which one did you prefer and why?
Okay. If I had to live in a metropolis again and my two choices were LA and New York, I'd move to LA.
Why?
Space.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't like being so claustrophobic.
Yeah.
And yes, New York City does smell.
Yes, it does.
Right. I don't have the money to live in New York City to match sort of the quality of life that I can afford here. Right. I probably don't have the money to do that in LA,
in Los Angeles,
but I can get closer to it.
Yeah.
I really want to be able to control my level of interaction with people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and mm-hmm. in New York City, there's just too many people for me.
Interesting.
You know, it's kind of the same in LA.
It's,
you know,
true.
They're just really big places.
Yeah, but LA is just absolutely more spread out. There is, the only thing, I desperately miss, the weather. I don't know if you've been watching the show Shrinking. I've talked about it on my show a couple times. I love it. And it's set in Pasadena. And Pasadena is just so beautiful. It's such a unique place. It's kind of like, I always said, it was kind of like the East Coast meets the West Coast. And there's so much architecture and the beauty. And I just love the whole backdrop of palm trees and mountains. And I just eat my heart. We just finished watching the last Shrinking. And I'm like, no, I love that show so much. And I get my fix and I miss it so much. But the thing is now fires are just, when I lived in Northern California, we were living in Santa Rosa and there was a firestorm, which was the worst experience. We were about 4 miles away from it, but it leaped over the freeway and it just took out entire neighborhoods. It looked like it was apocalyptic. It was unbelievable. And before I left Los Angeles, before I left Northern California to come here, we had a big fire. And then before I left Los Angeles to go to Northern California, there was a fire right outside of my window. The entire,
oh,
it was
good
the same,
Lord.
You know, it was awful. San Gabriel Mountains were on fire. And I remember I was chasing it. I went up and talked to a firefighter thinking, oh, I'm totally safe. So I asked him.
He was hot though, right?
Yes, he was very hot. And I said to him, thinking I was safe, I asked him, hey, I live over there. What are the chances of the fire hitting me? And I was like convinced he was going to be like, oh, don't even worry. There's not even an issue. And he's like, anything can happen. I was like, oh.
Right.
So, yeah. And I did find out that in the firestorm because I believe there were winds of 80 miles an hour and that just jumped freeways and took out whole neighborhoods.
It jumped. Yeah.
So
in that story, I thought it was going to turn into TikTok meme, if that's what you call a TikTok, where he turns and he pauses and then he says, run.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what it
is.
So as much as I miss it there, I feel like I just, and the thing is even if you live in the flats, you're going to breathe the air in. So this is what I tell myself when it's really humid and I hate it so much in the summer. That's what I tell myself. I don't want to be near the fire.
Well, you know, speaking of natural disasters, we're very close to Joplin. Remember when Joplin was wiped out by those tornadoes?
Right. Yes. Wow.
Right. So we're that's a 55-hour drive from here.
Wow.
However, right where we are, there's the topography breaks up mm-hmm. the weather systems that produce tornadoes.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
So Bentonville, 30 minutes south has them from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
An hour north has them from time to time. But tornadoes here in the sort of Benton County are few and far between. Yeah, I mean, rare.
I mean,
if ever. So we're pretty safe too.
Yeah, I mean, now just being a human being, you have to take into consideration the climate situation. And I think where I live right now, which is basically in the DC area, I live in Maryland, but it's the DC area. It's pretty good. I mean, I don't love the rain in the summer, but as far as danger, I think we don't really have too much danger to deal with. So
just crime
and and then lots of humidity and
lots
fucking
of
mosquitoes.
Humidity.
Ugh, the mosquitoes. I just can't take, I think the entire time that I lived in California, I don't think I had one mosquito bite and they love me. So
no mosquitoes in California.
No,
I mean in Southern California.
No, it's just, I just miss it so much, but okay, we're not going to go there because I'll just start crying. So
no tears. There are no tears required in this interview.
No, I won't cry. And I didn't even cry on my patrons only show today when I was talking about the horror of putting on a bridal dress, you know, like a bridesmaid dress. So didn't even cry then. I cried this weekend, though. I did cry this weekend, but I didn't cry on my show, which I have been known to do. I cry on the show occasionally.
Well, you know, if you get started up, you will cry from time to time, right?
That's true.
Right?
Very, very, very true. All right.
And people expect a certain amount of
a little bit of tears from me. Yeah. You know what? I completely lost my shit when I think it was when Ruth Bader Ginsburg had passed away and then Mitt Romney said, "Yeah, let's go ahead and vote on the you know, ACA." And I couldn't keep it together. I was like sobbing. So,
yeah.
And thankfully it's intact, but for the most part. But that really scared me.
Yeah. Well, when you're thinking about, I think that the SCOTUS requires a bit of tears right now.
Yes, lots of tears, lots and lots of them.
Christmas.
Just horrible. Okay, so we're going to move away from tears. Last thing I'm going to do.
Okay. Good.
I didn't tell you I was going to do this, so I'm just springing this on you. But it's going to be fun. So I don't know if you ever watched Inside the Actor's Studio, but
I have.
Okay, well, I figured you did. And James Lipton would always ask the Bernard Pivot questions. So I'm going to ask you those questions.
Sure.
All right. So this will be our last little bit here. Okay. Starting, what is your favorite word?
My favorite word?
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to say curse words, so I was ready for it. what is my favorite word? I have no idea. I should just open up a dictionary and just choose a word. What is my favorite word? I'm just gonna have to make one up.
Okay.
Not a word. I won't make up a word. I guess. You know, Nancy is my favorite word because that's my daughter's name.
Right.
We say bye to each other in a really fun way. So bye is fun for me.
How do you say it?
Bye.
Well,
like idiots.
You
like
taught me.
Little idiots.
You taught me a word that I used ever since you used it, which was lexicon.
The word itself is lexicon?
Yeah, I had never heard of that. I had never heard that word before. And I remember years ago, back in the early 2000s, you used the word lexicon and I looked it up. And now I use it. So you taught that word to me.
I wanted to start a movement that turned the word skirt into an adjective.
Because why?
I don't know. I was like, man, that was so skirt. I don't know, because I don't know, too much tequila. I don't know.
It never caught on, huh?
No, it didn't. I wonder why.
Okay, what's your least favorite word?
I would have said no. But I've come to love the word no. I think my least favorite word is going to be audit.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, even though there's nothing bad has been, you know,
right.
You know, it's not about unearthing badness or crime or anything like that. It's just such a terrible.
Yeah, everyone fears that.
Of weeks.
Okay, what's your favorite curse word?
You know what? I'm going to have to say the C word, but I'm not going to say it out loud.
And why is it the C word?
I don't know. I think it's got real good power.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't use it. I don't use it flippantly, and I don't typically call people it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to say, you know, he's a nasty C word, right?
Right.
I will use it in other heated situations. Okay. Get my drift.
I get your drift. Right. So what turns you on, speaking of other heated things?
Oh, in what way?
This is just the question. What turns you on?
Yeah. I kind of can't get my mind out of the last question. watermelon, should I say? Okay, a fine wine, thoughtful care. Yeah. I don't know.
So when we finish this questionnaire, I'm telling the watermelon story. Okay. what sound do you love?
Nancy's laugh.
What sound do you hate?
A certain orange bloviator.
I just like psychically knew you were going to say that. What profession, what profession other than yours would you like to attempt?
Oh God, I would love, and my time is not yet over. Mm-hmm. I would love to open a game store.
Wow. That could be fun.
Something that is really cool to walk into, not the current kind of game stores where, you know, like a place where, and when I say game store, I mean like role-playing games, mm-hmm. tabletop games, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. A place where women would like to go, mm-hmm. right? A place with really, really good drinks, a place with some healthy food, a wide variety of gaming tables meant for different types of games, and just, you know, a real good community fun vibe going on.
Hmm. Okay, so
what, and I may do it. I may just do it.
That would be really cool. Okay, what profession would you not like to participate in?
I would definitely not like to be an auditor.
Yeah,
an accountant. An accountant wouldn't be, I guess, terrible. Right. But you know, I've always thought that I might be a good lawyer too. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I really have the heart for it.
Right.
You know, I certainly wouldn't want to work in a restaurant.
Yeah, me neither.
I mean, there are other things too. I you know, honestly, I don't think I'd like to run a dump or a water reclamation facility. You know, I don't think I would like to be a subway train driver.
Yeah. No, I don't think that would be fun either. But you never know, for some people they might like it, so.
Well, I think that some people have like a thing about subways, and right. like that would be a dream.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Now, I wanted to ask you about this because of your time in Soviet Russia. Mm-hmm. Were your parents spies?
Yes.
You're gonna have to kill me now.
No, exactly. No, they're not spies. My dad worked for ABC News as a cameraman, and my stepmom is an editor, but over there she was just a young mom.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that those are spies. as a kid I wanted to be a spy or an astronaut.
Wow. Very cool. Yeah. What did you want to ask me about Russia?
If your parents were spies.
Oh, if my parents were spies, yeah. Well, it was my stepmother, so there's that. But she's not a spy. Okay, last question here. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I'm not a dick.
You're not,
let me show
you're not
you
a dick, Paul.
What?
You're not a dick, Paul.
No, not me, but him.
Oh, him. God's not a dick.
God.
Okay, so why do you want to hear that?
You know, bone cancer in children.
That's true. Yeah, I see.
You what know, saying, you yeah. know, all powerful, right. but yet still, right. you know.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
So now I'm just going to say, back in the day, back in the early 2000s, I had been invited to your home for dinner, and you made this lovely dinner, and we were eating dinner, and I went off on this whole tangent about how fruit is not dessert. And I mean, I was really adamant because it was like, I want sugar, I want fat, I want carbohydrates, I don't want fruit. Fruit isn't dessert. Fruit is something you eat for breakfast. I mean, I just wouldn't stop. And then, you know, you're clearing the table and you're like, I don't know if you're going to like what I'm serving for dessert. And you bring out a plate of watermelon. And I was just like, oh my God. I just always laugh thinking about like putting my foot in my mouth. Oh my God, that was so funny. But thankfully you didn't get too offended. And I did eat the watermelon. But
It was delicious.
It was delicious. And I still think though that dessert has to be fattening. It just has to be fattening. Because
so what is your dessert of choice currently then?
Well, right now, I'm not really eating dessert, but I've always enjoyed ice cream. I can't eat dairy, so I just eat the alternatives, and they make some great ones now.
Yes.
But I happen to be a very good baker, and so my motto on baking is as fattening as you can make it, like as yummy and fattening, and my secret ingredient is usually... It's so funny. It's rum flavoring. I used to put that in. It's like it brings out the butter and people think it's so funny. People would eat my cookies and think they were feeling drunk. And it's like, it's just rum flavoring. There's no alcohol in it.
Your brain is playing with you.
Yes. So, but yes, that's definitely. I love dessert. I wish I didn't, but I'm a sugar person, so I'm cutting it all out.
Dessert is fine. Dessert is good to love.
It is, and I do love it.
You know what I ate right before this, like moments before we began this interview? A lime popsicle.
Yum. I love popsicles too. You know what? There's a popsicle that I do enjoy, and it's chocolate. And it's not like a fudgesicle. It's icy, and it's really yummy. I don't know who makes it, but it's in the...
Did you say it's spicy?
No, it's just... I said it's icy. It's like icy, as opposed to creamy.
I'll put a hearing problem, I suppose.
Yeah, it's like not creamy, like a fudgesicle.
It's really
It's like a very... I wish I could remember the name, but I find it in the health section. And I think it's only like 60 calories, and... It's
perfect.
Sugar, but it's delicious, and I love it. So it does kind of hit that sugar need if you don't want to go too fattening. But yeah,
I will look for it in the health
section. Yes,
the frozen health section of my neighborhood.
The chocolate
Walmart
popsicles
market.
Are amazing. Well, Paul, it was just such a joy talking to you, and I loved interviewing you. Yeah, it was really fun. Let me see. Before I let you go, tell everybody where they can find you. And the theater.
Absolutely. We are triketheater.org. We spell theater the pretentious way, although we are not. So check out the theater stuff there. If your interest was piqued about the gaming stuff, check out my socials at @palindromeRPG.
At palindrome, and that's because your name is Savis.
Because my last name is a palindrome, yes.
Yes, it is. And then I know you also have, do you have Instagram? You have your stuff on Instagram, right, with the game?
Yes, both Trike and Palindrome, Instagram, Facebook, and the Twitter.
Awesome. And then I'm Author Kimberly on Twitter. I am Kimberly Johnson, L-E-Y, don't forget, on Spoutable, which I prefer right now, but still stuck on Twitter. And my books are on Amazon. Paul, it was awesome talking to you. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. A tremendous pleasure.